Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. This is Joe Scott, director of Pro-Life Colorado, sitting in for Bob Enyart, pastor of Denver Bible Church. While he's on his way, I guess he's there by now, down to Colorado Springs for yet another hearing with Focus on the Family. Things are looking mighty interesting down there right now. I don't think I'm at liberty to tell you everything that's going on, but just know that we are encouraged, especially Bob and my husband Ken and his brother Brian Enyart. They're really encouraged by what's going on. We feel like maybe Focus will hear us. Maybe. It's a long shot, but there's still a shot, which is more than we expected. So that's great. Well, it's a few days since the March for Life. We had way more people than I thought would show up during the middle of the week. I was very encouraged by that. Lots and lots of new faces, which was also very encouraging. And it went off without a hitch. The weather, for a change, was beautiful. It was a beautiful day. And some people came up to me afterwards and said, Joe, I'm coming out one day this year. Because I asked everybody not to come out every day, but I asked everybody to come out one day. And it looks like some people are going to actually do that, and hopefully a few people will see the need and come out more than just one day. But that's asking an awful lot right away, but let's hope. Every year we seem to pick up someone that's consistently coming after the march, so that's also encouraging. And today there was a baby saved at the abortion mill. It was one of those things that she was going in and she was cussing, and she had two friends and they were cussing at me and yelling and just saying pretty vile things. And they kept saying, come on, come on out. We can help you. We'll do whatever we can. She said, are you going to raise the baby? Of course I said yes. So she goes into the abortion clinic and she is in there for, well, I don't know, about 15 minutes, and praise God for cigarettes. She had to have a cigarette. So she came out, and the cigarettes were in the car, and she had parked right in front of where my ladder was. So she had to go to the car and get her cigarettes, and I began to talk to her. And she said, really, my mother is on SSI. She's only 17 years old, and every problem in the world she had. Every problem, we just kept talking and talking, and I was thanking God every minute that went by that I had another minute with her, and she was calming down and she was actually being civilized. And she said, well, I'm going to get an ultrasound. I'm going to look at the ultrasound. And I said, how far along are you? And she said she was 8 weeks. And I said, well, let me show you what your baby looks like. And she, Wallace, said, it's not a baby. It doesn't look like a baby. So I gave her a card with a picture of an eight-week-old baby, and right beside that on the card is a picture of an eight-week-old abortion, which happens to be my most powerful piece of literature. She looked at that, and she said, this is my baby? I said, yes, your baby is playing with his little fingers and toes right now. So that she sobered up pretty much at that point, and she walked back into the abortion clinic. But I said, look, if you change your mind or if you need to talk some more, call me. I'm going to go for breakfast real close by. If you get out in time, call me and I'll buy you guys breakfast. And so we went to the little restaurant. It's not a very expensive restaurant, but we went, and I was in the restroom. I had just gotten to the restaurant, went in the restroom, and my cell phone rang. And it was this young lady, and she said, I've seen the ultrasound. I don't think I'm going to kill my baby. I want to try and keep my baby. So I said, well, meet me at the restaurant. She's like a mile away or maybe 2 miles away from the abortion clinic. And all three of them came. And before they came, I had gone into the restaurant and put two tables together. And it kind of upset a waitress a little bit. She said, I don't want two tables together. I can't get around really well. I can't wait. I'm not that good. And so I said, well, give us a big booth someplace. And she set up this booth for us. And in the meantime, I was telling her that we need privacy because I've got to talk this young lady into keeping her baby. I know the waitress sort of well. And she was so excited. She was so excited. She helped us. She stayed away from the table. She did everything she could to make us comfortable and have privacy. They didn't sit anybody around us while we were talking. And the three girls were there, and we talked very seriously about the kinds of help that we could get her. And we talked about her life, which is not the greatest. She decided to keep her baby, which was fabulous, and I had a silver dollar with me, and I handed her the silver dollar and told her how it's made of precious metal and it's valuable, and so is she, precious and valuable in the eyes of the Lord, and to give it to her baby. And, you know, of course, it was a touching moment, but then we began to talk about her real life, which isn't shocking, but it should be. It should be. This young lady doesn't know who the father is. It could be five different guys. She's 17. She's 17 years old. I said, why is it that you kids do this? Don't you understand that there are consequences for your actions? Do you understand what HPV is, human papillomavirus? All three of the girls knew what it was, and one of them had it. And the other two haven't been tested. So we discussed consequences and making right choices, and then we began to talk to them about, there was John Wiechek, he's another protester, and Josh Augenbaum. We began to talk to all three of the girls about Jesus, and all three of them said, oh, we used to go to church all the time, we were in youth groups, we always, you know, we used to believe, but we don't anymore, because each one of them had a reason why something bad happened, and they didn't get that warm, fuzzy feeling anymore that they used to when they were a kid. So we went over why they weren't getting that warm, fuzzy feeling. Because they reached the age of accountability, and they chose not to follow Jesus. They chose to follow the flesh. And one of the girls said, well, my brother was killed a year ago, and ever since then, God can't show me that he's there. I said, according to what I have just heard out of your own mouth, you haven't done anything that God would want to have anything to do with you. I mean, their lifestyle is promiscuous and wild. And she said, well, God's not answering me. I said, maybe you're not listening. Maybe you're not turning. So the whole conversation during breakfast was about Jesus and giving your life over to him and understanding how to develop a relationship with Jesus, which was just a really neat time. She's going to call me tomorrow after she sees the Crisis Pregnancy Center people. She's going to go get on prenatal vitamins. She called her mom while I was there, and her mom was happy she wasn't killing her baby. And then she got a phone call from her grandmother, who was thrilled that she wasn't going to kill her baby. So she's got lots of support. She just needs lots of direction, and pray for us that we can be a real good anchor in her life, an anchor that she can look to and be directed by, because she's got an awful lot of other things pulling on her. And so sometimes the girls that come out and keep their baby, they're the ones that you think are going to be the last ones in, never coming out. I mean, you would never thought she'd walk back out and even talk to us, and then end up having breakfast and keeping her baby and talking about Jesus. You know, with the Lord, sometimes all you have to do is show up and open your mouth, and he'll use you. Doesn't matter how smart you are. Doesn't matter what you know or what you don't know. As long as you show up and you love somebody, he'll use you. But don't compromise. Now I'm going to tell you what happened on Friday, and this is a devastating story. Friday, there was a young Muslim woman with a veil and everything. She was driving into Planned Parenthood, and she stopped to talk. And I said, Mom, please don't kill your baby. She said, I'm not killing my baby. I killed my baby in October. I'm here to get the paperwork to prove that I did. And I said, will you stop? And, of course, the security guards are telling her to move and get in. And she's very, shy, sort of. And I said, will you stop and talk to me on the way out? Because I'm thinking there's complications, and I want to know what the complications are and if I can get her help. So she said she would. Then she comes. She's in there maybe 15 minutes, and she comes out. And I pull her over to the side of the road, and the security guards are losing their mind because I'm directing her as to where to park. And they're thinking, I don't know what they're thinking, but they don't want me talking to her. So she parks and puts the window down. We begin to talk about the paperwork that she got. I said, you've already had an abortion? She said, yes, but I didn't want it. And I said, what do you mean? She's an Ethiopian woman, has an Ethiopian boyfriend, and he had been cheating on her. When she complained, he beat her. And then he took her to the abortion clinic and told her she needed an exam. She signed all the paperwork. She does not read English. She signed all the paperwork. She went in, and they aborted her twins. And she began to weep. And she said, he killed three people that day. He killed my two babies, and he killed me. And there was no consoling her. I was heartbroken. She was as broken as I've ever seen any woman in my life. Her children were torn from her body without her permission, because she comes from a culture that women are owned. They're treated like livestock. She had no idea what was going on. It's devastating to think. Imagine you're pregnant, or your wife is pregnant. You're having twins, you're thrilled, and the next thing you know, you've signed a paper and your children have been torn from your womb and from your wife's womb. That's unbelievable. So I asked her, why are you getting this paperwork? Why do you want this? And she said, his father has just come from Africa, and I'm going to show him. I told him what he's done to me. I told his father what this man has done to me, and he doesn't believe me. He doesn't think Americans do this. So I'm coming to get the proof. And she gave me the boyfriend's phone number, and she said, call him and tell him what he's done to me. I said, is he going to hurt you if I call him? She said, it doesn't matter. I'm dead. It doesn't matter what he does to me. I said, what good is it going to do for you to show his father these papers other than, okay, he'll believe you, because then his father will make him marry me. I said, honey, why do you want to marry a man that would treat you like this? She said, I'm no good. I'm dead. And the only way I'm going to be able to eat is if he marries me. I said, no, he doesn't have to marry you. And she said, he has to. And she began to cry. She says she has no children. And I said, I can show you how you will see your children again. I can do that for you. Will you meet with me? And she said, yes. And we made a time to meet on Monday morning. But she was taking these papers to him to show her baby's father, the grandfather. So the grandfather would make the father marry her, which was just seemed to me like asking for trouble for the rest of your life. So Saturday night, I got a call from her, and she called and she said she had shown the father, the grandfather, the papers, and he thought he was very angry with the son, but the son was not going to marry her. So she wanted me to go with her to the police on Monday and tell them that she had been beaten and forced to have an abortion because of him. And I'm thinking, there's no way they're going to listen to her, because she never called the police when he was beating her. And she signed all the papers for the abortion. But I didn't want to tell her that. I wanted to meet with her. I wanted to tell her that she may be dead, but she can be born again. I wanted to tell her that she could have her children again. She was adamant about Monday morning early. She said, call me anytime. I answer my phone all the time. Doesn't matter if you call me in the middle of the night, in the morning, I will answer the phone. Just call me. I've been calling her since Sunday. I can't get a hold of her. I can't get a hold of her. I stopped a policeman today that drives by just to make sure we're not doing anything wrong. I stopped him and I told him I have a dilemma. He said, I know, it's freezing. I said, no, I need to tell you. And I told him the story I just told you guys. And he gave me a way to have the police check on her. Thank God this man was actually a fine young man. And he said, this is what you do. And he gave me a phone number. And I'm going to have the police look for her. I'm worried that something has happened to her. She's new in the United States. She doesn't know anyone. And now I can't get a hold of her. He may have just taken her phone. They don't live in the same house, though. That's what made me so worried. She could have gone home, but maybe she hasn't. I don't know. So I'll keep you guys updated, but pray for her to come contact me, or that the police can find. Maybe she's just afraid to talk to me now. I don't know. But it wouldn't be the first time that one of my Ethiopian women has had a terrible time and needed me, and I haven't been able to get to her. So pray. Her name is Abdi. Pray for her. And keep her foremost in your mind. And I'll update you the next time I do the show, the next time Bob has to go to Colorado Springs. Now, I have a special guest with me in the studio. He just walked in. It's Will Duffy, founder of the Collaborators Project. Hi, Will. How are you doing?
Hi, doing great.
So I have you on the show today because of a blog.
Yes.
Now, this blog is a girl named Christina. And isn't this, it sounds like a great thing that she's done. It says, enough with and then you can kill the baby.
Yeah, I got all excited when I saw this blog. It's titled, enough with and then you can kill the baby. And that's what we're saying, right?
Right.
Any law that ends with and then you can kill the baby, enough with it.
Yeah, let's get rid of them. Let's stop killing babies.
Yeah, they're evil, of course.
Yes.
So we read on and we find out that's not what she meant, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. She called us snarky.
Snarky?
Yeah, I looked it up. Well, actually, I had someone look it up. It means irritable, quick-tempered, and snippy.
Wow.
So you're snarky.
I guess.
So in this thing, she's upset because we only want to do it our way. We're purists. And shouldn't everybody try to save some? And then she compared saving some babies within then you can kill the baby laws to Schindler, didn't she?
Yeah, you know, the whole point of this blog here is that she is kind of tired of hearing this phrase, and then you can kill the baby, which is a victory in and of itself, because
yeah.
We are getting the message out.
People are picking up on it. And
yeah, people are picking up on it. People are preaching it, and people are believing it because it's true. These laws do end with, and then you can kill the baby. And she at least admits that they do.
Right. She admits that. But, in my mind, when I read that, enough with, and then you can kill the baby, to me, it's almost like a thorn in their side. It sticks in their craw because they know it's true, and then you can kill the baby. Those are the babies that they think it's okay to kill.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's not what God wants, is it? It's like God doesn't exist. If we don't conform to this society and work within the perimeters of politics and laws, nothing will get done.
Yeah, you know, the people always say, including her, you know, we agree with, you know, going for personhood and trying to return personhood to the unborn, but that doesn't make these laws bad. And what I want to find out is, people always say they're for personhood and they're working towards it. I don't see any evidence of that. Since Roe v. Wade, there's been one personhood amendment in the entire United States, and that was right here in Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in 2008, last year. Nobody's going for personhood. They're spending every dime and every minute of their time on abortion regulations that don't have the authority to save one child.
That's right. It's frightening, and it's foolish. It's foolish. If we stand on every time you put in place, and then you can kill the baby law, it's some regulation. Every time you do that, you diminish life for every child.
Yeah, you undermine the right to life of the unborn. You undermine personhood, and you further entrench child killing into our laws.
And Obama is threatening to wipe all of those laws out with one stroke of the pen anyway, isn't he?
Yeah, and what does that prove? That proves that all of this work the pro-life movement has done is basically they've built their house on sand.
On sinking sand.
Their whole house is going to crumble with the stroke of a pen.
That's right. And in that law, the FOCA law, there's one immoral part of that law. And it's telling anyone that has a conscience not to kill a baby or not to perform abortion that they don't have that right.
Yeah, that's evil.
That's evil. But all the regulating and stuff, it gives the false impression that the regulating is as evil as the conscience clause in that.
Yeah, we have to realize at some point that we have made no progress in what amounts to almost 40 years. And I'm glad that there's leadership finally here in Colorado, where we happen to be, Colorado Right to Life, American Right to Life, that's doing the right thing, taking the right steps to not only end abortion, but do it the moral, godly way.
You just said the key word, the moral, godly way. If we don't make our foundation on the rock, there is no foundation. Like you said, it's sinking sand. We lose, hands down. Hands down. I would rather Obama fight God than he fight a regulation. It's a lot harder to fight God face to face. He's just like the story I just told of Abdi. He just unleashed abortion funding around the world, internationally, right? Didn't he just do that?
Yeah, tax-funded abortion.
And how many cultures in the world treat women like Abdi's being treated?
A lot.
So he's sentenced women like Abdi to torture and grief and shame and an unbelievable life. He's done that with one stroke of the pen. Because we say some, I've just got a note in the window. Someone's donating $100 to the ministry. My ministry, that was really nice. Thank you, John D.
That's, what is that, prolifecolorado.com?
Prolife, the website that's never updated.
It's a great website.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's what building your house on sand does. One stroke of the pen. So we're busy coming up with all the, we're not, but the pro-life ministries around the country are coming up with all these laws that say, and then you can kill the baby. And the biggest thing, I don't know about you, Will, but the biggest thing that I find that I have to overcome with pro-lifers who have a heart, they're even out on the street. They tell me, if we can save one baby, it's worth it. If that law saves one baby, and then they talk about Schindler, and Schindler saved Jews that were about to be killed, but how many Jews did he legislate to death?
Yeah, none.
None. And how do you tell someone, this is legislating people to death? It's entrenching abortion into the fabric of our society, into the framework of our laws. What do you tell them?
You know, this is, when you get down to it, this is really the devil's game. The devil would be willing to end abortion as long as one Christian would kill their child.
That's right.
So how about we end 99.99% of abortions? Well, that's child sacrifice, and that's wrong.
Right. Right. On this blog that Christine wrote, you answered her, and you said, what did you tell her?
Well, let's find out. Yeah, as most people know, on a blog, after the author writes their piece, anybody on the internet is free to comment. And here's what I wrote. FOCA, which is the Freedom of Choice Act, FOCA will undo all such incremental laws, showing that the pro-life movement has built its house on sand. Trying to return to slavery would not be as simple as the stroke of a pen, because personhood of blacks was established. Any law that ends with, and then you can kill the baby, undermines personhood and violates God's command of do not murder.
Right. And that's the those are excellent points. It undermines personhood, and you're right about slavery. Obama's not going to sign anything tomorrow to put the white man into slavery.
Yeah.
Because he can't. Because it's been established as evil and wrong, and history proves him out.
Yeah, and we want to get mad at the Democratic Party and get mad at Obama, but I really think that so much of this is the fault of the Republican Party and National Right to Life.
Oh, I agree. I agree. It's just using his name because he's president now. I got to get used to it.
And the first comment on this blog was from a guy named Joe, and he said something interesting. He said that the most prominent among our failures, meaning the pro-life movement, has been our inability to get our presidents to make good appointments to the Supreme Court.
That, I read that. That was unbelievable. It's been our inability to obey God.
Yeah, and you know what he means is that people have lost the ability to think.
Right.
What did George W. Bush say before he became president? What was his first promise during his campaign for presidency? It was he has no litmus test when appointing judges.
Oh, that's true. That's
so
true.
He said his first campaign promise was, I'm not going to appoint pro-life judges. So why didn't we listen? Why would we expect him to appoint someone pro-life when he said he wouldn't?
It's not that we didn't listen. We just said, well, he's a politician and he can't have a litmus test, and didn't think about the opposite, who was saying, my litmus test is they will be pro-choice.
That's exactly right. The Democratic candidates have no problem saying, I'm only going to appoint pro-choice justices, which means one thing. The Democrats are more dedicated to killing kids than the Republicans are to saving them.
Well, it also means they're more honest. By saying, I'm not going to have a litmus test, this is just saying, I'm going to appoint pro-choice.
Exactly, and that's exactly what happened.
And it always happens, and it has happened for the last 40 years. And every step of the way, we think we pat ourselves on the back if someone says, we banned partial birth abortion, which was an atrocity. Nothing to pat ourselves on the back for. We just need to think and teach people around us to think.
Yeah, people have lost the ability to think, and I am so tired of how many Christians are sold out to the Republican Party. It is not a Christian party.
No, it's not a Christian party. It's a political party that has gotten us nowhere.
And Republicans are becoming more and more immoral, and Christians do not care. They love the Republican Party. They're sold out to the Republican Party. They don't care who the Republican Party candidate is. That's who they're going to vote for.
But they've been taught through churches and Christian ministries and a bunch of other places that's where our hope lies. And that's idolatry.
Yeah, Obama had no problem saying, I'm going to sign FOCA when I get into office.
Right.
I'm going to undo everything that the pro-life movement has done. And who was the only presidential candidate that said, I would end abortion when I get in office? And that was Alan Keyes.
Alan Keyes.
Nobody cares.
Well, he couldn't even get any publicity. That was kind of sad. But.
And it doesn't matter. Christians that like Alan Keyes don't care because they're going to go with whoever the Republican Party nominates. Who is this Republican Party that we're bowing down to?
It's not a party that God is a part of.
That is exactly right.
We need to, as Christians, to always put God first, love God first, honor God first, and follow Him by faith, not by sight. Thanks for listening, folks. Maranatha is the best Christian school around. Call them, get your kids enrolled,